is. It's your old pal, the Crypt Keeper.
Howdy, folks. I'm Sleazy P. Martini, entrepreneur extraordinaire.
Hi, this is Doc Bradley. You're listening to Quality Time.
This is Curtis Armstrong, and you're listening to Quality Time.
Quality Time Podcast.
And you're listening to Quality Time.
Quality Time. The dangling bit.
And you're listening to Quality Time Broadcast. And they paid me, very little to say this.
Quality Time, video games, all the girls, comedy and matches. Quality Time, video games, all the girls, comedy and matches.
Show started. I was spending all my minutes calling a plumber to pay them hundreds of dollars because my basement smells like raw sewage. So I love a good Sunday raw sewage kind of day. Feeling good.
And it's not even coming out of your back stream.
Yeah, you know, I was looking at you know, when I woke up this morning, Jeremy, I looked at my bank account. I was like, God, it'd be really good if I had like a major house disaster today to really fuck this up. And sure enough, the good Lord provides. And now, yeah, you know, I was all starting to feel a little comfortable with myself. And that's when it all comes rolling in.
Is this a bad time to tell you that your basement is my favorite pay-per-view event? It's Sunday Night Raw Sewage.
Yeah, so it does smell like raw sewage at Quality Time Studios, which I think is befitting for the movie that we'll be reviewing later today. Welcome to Quality Time. I'm your host, Eric Woodworth. I'm joined first by the lion mayness herself, Miss Ashley Pontius.
Hi, Daddy.
You look like you got a full lion's mane of hair today. You're just like, you're poofing it out. You're saying, fuck the world. Let's go.
Man, Eric, I don't want to surprise you, but if you think my head is hairy.
wait till you see the 16 stone I got between the legs.
I've been growing it out. I'm going to sell it to little girls as a Barbie wig. You can just trim it to whatever you want.
I'm also joined.
I hate the commercials for pubic hair now.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah, that Atari game, Pubert. I love that. That would be a fun game, you know, where you're just a pubic hair trying to find its way into the toilet because it just stays on every part that isn't the actual water. Maybe that's
we've been talking
problem.
About your pubes a lot lately.
I don't know how my pubes get everywhere on the toilet, but I found one on the underside of it, of the seat itself.
It's not that you're losing pubes. It's the fact that they are significant. They're impressive.
Yeah. When you get this. When they get to 3 inches, they just fall out. It's fun.
Is that what happened to your penis?
Yeah. I've actually been fashioning my pubes into a Steven Seagal-esque ponytail every day and putting little teal beads on them. It's really nice. You should try it. I'm also joined by my brother, Jeremy P. Smooth Woodworth. How are you, sir? Oh, my God. He's whispering. I don't know. What am I talking about?
I decided to be part of your program for your movie today. So I
don't understand any breathy word that's coming out of your mouth right now.
Guest star Steven Spiegel.
You're Steve Spiegel? So you're Steven Seagal?
Steven Spiegel.
you're Steve Steve Seagal and Josh Spiegel combined. Steve Spiegel.
I have karate class called Spiegelism, where we Jew slap everybody to death.
Okay. I think he said the word Jew slap in there. It's very hard to understand you, by the way.
But wait, if you're Steven Spiegel, Shouldn't you be more shouldn't you be more like, he wants the punani? In today's news.
Stevens, speak only whispers everything through the entire movie, but in Yiddish. So.
In Yiddish?
Yeah. This is, Jeremy, as far as the bar of impressions you've brought to the show week in, week out, like, this is a new standard of low that you've accomplished. By the way, you know what? Why not? Since it was already mentioned, how about we give just a little? There's no new Jeremy music. We could do a little Steven Seagal this morning.
When the girls start to strut, you could look at their butt, you shouldn't do that. This is just a pity,
not just there to cover her. Can we explore that line? Can we explore that line he says for 1 second?
Yeah.
Because if I'm hearing him right, he says, when the girls start to strut, you stare at their butt, but you shouldn't do that?
Hold on, let's wind it back. Let's see if we can hear it.
You could look at their butt, you shouldn't do that. The guard dress is just a pity, not just there to cover her kitty.
Is there anything he can't do? I mean, I heard something about the kitty after that, which I assume is also a synonym for punani.
Can I tell you, I've never felt drier. Like, my downstairs feels like an entire box of Triscuits.
One of my special karate moves is the spinning curly slap, which is much like a spinning curly slap.
Yeah, I like that. And you heard the song, your pussy turned into a Popeye's biscuit the second it happened. It's like, I can't. Just salt. Yeah,
whatever Ellicott City is the opposite of what's going on with my pussy right now.
It's a sandstorm. Your pussy's so dry it's about to open up a giant lion and lead you to the genie of the lamp.
My pussy is so dry that Brendan Fraser is gonna try and kill a mummy in it.
Your pussy's so dry it's about to be in Spider-Man 3.
It's bad. I don't feel a fucking thing. In fact, I recoil at Steven Seagal. Like, it's like if my vagina could invert more, it would. It's trying to get away. I would rather fuck the raw sewage in Eric's basement than Steven Seagal.
Oh man. So anyway, that we will be going over the movie The Glimmer Man in a bit, but I just want to catch you up on a couple things. The raw sewage in my house being a paramount right now. It does smell fucking completely foul in the Woodworth basement right now. No, it's not me. Yes, I did check. I did.
I haven't even pooped into your bathroom for like months.
Yeah, my wife walked down and she goes, are your legs open all the way? Because Jesus Christ. So I had a couple things to go over. Exciting things in the Woodworth lexicon. I did film a commercial for 98 Rock, which I think will start airing next week if it just doesn't make the cutting room floor. Maybe it is a possibility I was too gay for their listenership. It is possible.
I don't think that's possible.
So, we'll see if I make it to air, but it was very fun. I battled sweating profusely, which was a real struggle throughout the shoot because we had to do a bunch of outdoor takes. And it was, if we went back to Thursday of last week, probably the hottest day on record in the state of Maryland. At least it felt like that. And mm-hmm. they were like, yeah, we need you to quickly run. I had to do a scene where I was like, I need you to quickly move and get into the car. And we did this shot, I swear, the most of anything. They're like, all right, you're too fast. Okay, you're too slow. Can you try it again? God. Oh, we fucked the camera up. I did it like 15 times. Every time I'm sweating more and more and like starting to melt through because I'm wearing a full suit. Like, oh God, I'm dying right now. I'm dying right now. I'm dying right now. And I'm very fat, and that it showed. And I did have one particular, there were two outtakes that I made people laugh, and another where the great Justin Schlegel completely ruined a take. They were both good, but there was one where Scott hands me waffles. It's supposed to be like the commercial is supposed to be wake up with Justin, Scott, and Spiegel. It's me going through my day, and they're in the room with me, right? In different okay. shots, right? That's the concept of this commercial. And one, Scott is making me breakfast, and it says, English muffin or waffle? And just every take where I was allowed to talk, I go, waffles! Like that. I would just scream, and I broke. They were like, why do you talk like a child? I was like, I guess I get excited for waffles. This is what this is how you get excited for a waffle, Scott. I don't know what you want from me. And they were like, can you try a different one? I was like, okay. Waffles! And I give it more. I would just give it more and more every time. They're like, why is your voice so high pitched? I don't know. Because I have a small penis. There was so the other shot where I fucking lost it was there's a bed scene where Justin's supposed to pop up from behind my big ass and go, good morning, sleepyhead. And we're doing the shot, you know, you do everyone like 15 times or whatever. There's one where he pops up and just goes, guess who's pregnant? And it was a full stop of the shoot. So very exciting. We'll see if it actually makes it to air and I become a local peddler of terrestrial radio by Monday. So very exciting. Aww. Very exciting stuff.
That's awesome. Congrats.
Thank you.
If they're going to broadcast this on the moon.
Yes. All the Moonanites. Oh, we love JSS.
Oh my God. Call it sounds. Apollo 9/11.
I want this commercial to go on a satellite and with a record made of gold so they can destroy it.
Oh, is this a, like Carl Sagan? I gotcha. Like where he sends out the thing. Yeah. Close Encounters of the Fart Kind.
Since the aliens will see it and then they'll destroy us because of that.
No, they look at it and they look at it and they're like, we're fine. There's no intelligent life. We can move. We can move on.
They'll do a documentary about Eric and call it Fire in the Sky. And by fire, it's all the farts he makes after he eats those Doritos. Cheetos.
Sorry. Oh, man. Speaking of those, I'm glad you brought those up. As you know, I'm an avid eater of Flaming Hot Cheetos. I found a new flavor of Cheeto. It is the hot, sweet, and spicy. It's got a little bit of sweet, and it's got a shit ton of that powder, the Flaming Hot powder on it. I ate a bag of these on the way back from a show with Tommy Simbazo on Friday night, and I did not make it the rest of the way without almost shitting my pants. Really elite level heartburn and everything, like adding the sugary sweetness to it, really whole new facet of diarrhea that I made that day. So shout outs to
saying like Ollie's bad.
Yeah they were so bad, I guess I picked them off the shelf and Tommy's like, oh, those look good, and he looked for them, there was no other bag, so like they're clearly discontinued and I bought them.
Well, you know, real talk, Eric, those things, Talkies, I think, I don't know how to pronounce it.
I've
talkies,
eaten them many times. Yeah,
they are in I think a lot of trouble because so many people have eaten them so much they're actually causing physical ailments in people, especially young teenagers, that it's like making their colons bleed.
Well, that's because, listen, the generation below us is soft, okay? Their assholes haven't experienced a lifetime of trauma that mine mm-hmm. has had, you know? Mm-hmm. I think I'm a modern marvel for the level of intake I have of these processed mm-hmm. powders.
So, like, I think if your asshole could talk, it would ask you to go to therapy.
I it's funny, just to bring it back to Steven Seagal, I know we haven't gotten into the movie yet, but every time I have one, I found this perfect cure. It's powdered deer penis. You just put it right under your tongue and it works like a dream. Here's you right.
I really like that Doritos commercial where Jay Leno says, "Hey, go get some Doritos. I'll make your anus bleed."
I remember that classic Jay Leno bit.
Yeah, I'm Jay Leno. I like having people's anus bleed. Yeah.
That's weird because I would have put this under stupid human tricks. But okay.
And with that show on Friday night, it was at the Avalon Theater, where the average age of the show was over 65. There was a real. I always thought it was a blue show, not a blue haired show. I was mistaken. They did not love my comedy stylings, though I got a good couple of laughs out of them, mostly from riffs. But as soon as I went into an actual bit, didn't love it. So I kind of struggled through that set. They did love Bussy at the end, which is great. It was a real Bussy crowd at the end with me and Tommy performing. So that was exciting. But if you've never been to this place, the Avalon Theater, it's in Easton, Maryland, and it is set up like the hotel from The Shining. It is red carpets and really creepy, old looking. They have a rickety elevator in there. So we are performing on the second floor of this theater, which I did mention. I was just like, man, we sold out the Avalon Theater, and I didn't realize we were in the little room upstairs. And you know what was in the main room, Ashley? Why we weren't in the main stage? And you know,
you like couldn't be a puppeteer. Go ahead.
Hey, it wasn't even a show. It was just auditions for the Christmas play Elf, and everyone was bringing their toddlers there to try out to see if they could be in the stage production of Elf. That's what bumped Bussy from the main room.
You know, dreams matter. I'm sorry. No, I can't be mean even because I feel bad. I know that feeling, and it kind of sucks.
Tommy,
was this actual children's theater or a real theater?
It's a real theater in Easton mm-hmm. that holds about like 350 people, and we were in the room that holds like 75 people upstairs. But hey, listen, sold out show. I'm not here to complain about a sold out show. What I will say is that there was one of the elderly couples comes out. And they're really nice. It's this older, actually kind of looked like Raven's great Ed Reed. I was just like, looked very similar to him. He's got gray hair. And he's like, hey, man, Easton needed this, man. I was like, I don't think they did. But, you know, hey, man, thank you. You know, blah, blah, blah. We're dapping it up. Mm-hmm.
Hey, it's no Denton. I'll tell you that right now.
Yeah. He and his wife get into the elevator, and this other elderly couple who has like, she has a walker with like skis on it like this, and she's slowly moving. She's getting into the elevator just to make the one floor trip down to the lobby. The second the doors close, I look at Tommy. I was like, quick, follow me. Let's run. Let's go and pretend that we're down. Like they didn't get off the elevator on the first floor. So we book it downstairs. With time to spare, we set up like we're leaning up against the wall, like where they left us upstairs. And as soon as the doors open, I was just like, hey, what's up? Did you guys press the right button? And like the guy goes back in the elevator. He's like, are we on the right floor?
That's so mean.
I see the doors close and they press lobby and they open back up again. And I'm like, maybe it's broken. You guys might have to take the steps. And then Tommy, we finally break. We're just kidding. We ran downstairs real quick.
But that's so mean.
Messed with their minds. Oh, I love so much.
I can't wait till Eric's on oxygen when he's older and someone just keeps slowly just keeps pinching it and he's like and then let him just keeps.
Man, they were so nice to us that we played with their minds. It was fun.
That's my favorite thing that Eric does to people.
and then I went back upstairs and then had to pretend that I wasn't out of breath from quickly running downstairs and then running upstairs for like five. Like, no, I'm good. Woo. I'm great. My goal was I was like, to try to convince them to press one, and I was like, no, it's on the first floor, not lobby. That's where you're looking for. And then run back upstairs and be like, I think you're on the wrong floor again. But Jesus, I couldn't get them that far. We only got them down to the lobby and back in. So anyway,
Eric's so fast, he's breaking that color barrier.
So that was fun. What's new in the world of Ashley Pontius? Shows, doing things? I know you had a big show last night. Got called in at the last minute. How'd that go?
I did. I actually had a really good time. Very drunk, fun audience. Like, they're almost too fun, which is a discussion we all had, where they are almost too drunk and loose that you're not even at your punchline and every single thing you're saying, you're like, this is just great. And you're like, okay.
They're just giggly as fuck. Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Laughing
so
at
it was,
the premise. They're like,
yes.
So I was,
it's like
so
a
I drive,
Paula Poundstone show.
So I drive a smart car.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know what I mean? Like, it's an easy night for all of us. So, like, I'm not going to complain. I had a great audience. They were very nice to us. No complaints at all. It's funny you bring up my smart car, though. So they finally aired the Jamboree episode of the most infamous trip we ever took together and the only trip we ever took together during the pandemic. And they finally aired that episode on Shudder. I'm not in the documentary, but guess what? My car is...
R.I.P. that car. Were you like, oh, I know that fucking thing. Hell yeah.
My now dead car has a TV credit and I don't. It's fucking unfair. But it was fun to see my car. And I saw friend of the show on the episode The Fog, Chris LaMartina.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Is in the front row of that. So that's very cool to see him. I don't have like a lot, you know, I've been a little reclusive the last couple weeks. Just busy with lots of all these things going on. The only like sort of fun thing, like maybe that I'll talk about is, so listeners, I've talked a little bit about my favorite employee at work, which is Steve. And Steve has joked on and off that he has this super good looking brother that he jokingly is like, I want to set you two up. And I'm like, ha ha ha. Mm-hmm. Hilarious. Well, I start joking about this being a thing to the point that then he's like, I regret that I've put this into the universe. Like, I don't think this is a good idea. It's like two speeding trains coming together, and I mean coming. And it really bothers him now. So now it's a fun thing to joke about. Well, Friday, Steve has to leave work early. And he stops at my desk and he goes, hey, there's an emergency. I gotta leave. I'm like, are you okay? He goes, yeah. So my brother might be coming back from Hawaii. He broke up with his girlfriend. And he goes, look, you are not to let my brother inside you.
Jesus Christ.
I go, no promises. Because I finally got a look at this brother, ladies and gentlemen. Holy fucking shit. This man, I feel like this man's abs, if Helen Keller was trying to read Braille, is going to be my hands on this dude's dick. You know what I mean? Okay. Like, it's just, you just feel the bumps all the way down. And this is not an invitation for anyone to harass him. Eric, I might have you bleep this because I don't want anybody bugging someone who doesn't deserve it.
Looking for a bleep.
I found his Instagram because I was curious. I've sort of seen pictures. Not only can you just see this Adonis of a man, his fucking name. His name is Maximus Testicles. So I just, listeners, I'm having a good time. You know, I've been single for such a long time again.
What was it like for him to grow up in the band Guar? That's my first question.
Listeners, I've been single for such a long time, so it is fun to look, but it's even more fun to upset people with the idea that I could become a part of their family.
Hey, you know what I say? You know what I say to that?
Yo, man, why don't you just try crack?
I've been sitting on this drop from the Glimmer Man where he just, it's the first thing Keenan Ivory Wayans says. It's,
yo, man, why don't you just try crack?
Eric, I'm not going to finger your crack. The last time I did, it now smells like raw sewage in your basement. So, sorry.
Oh, good.
You have to stand in line behind Steve's brother. I'm sorry.
All right. Steve's brother it is. Shout out to Max's testicles.
Max's?
Good for him.
I found a new smell.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Here we go. Jeremy, the floor is yours.
Wait, Jeremy, do you mean a new smell to you or just a new smell to the universe?
A new smell that you didn't want because it stinks.
Okay. those kind. My bad.
So we have a new bread drawer because mice and rats and roaches will get into it. So we sealed our bread for a bread box,
and I
tried to make sure that I had my potatoes in the bread box also. I didn't realize that the kitchen was getting to like 90 degrees, and all the potatoes started to rot, and I could smell something rotting. I was like, oh, I guess I got to take care of these. And the white finally got, it's like the bottom of the box was like completely full of rotting potato juice. I was like, oh, this is bad. And of course, God. you try to save one or two potatoes out of the bag, and you grab them, and it's like pussy, disgusting, rotting potatoes in your hand. So I was like, I got two of them to save. I could like wash them. And then I take the rest of the bag and I throw it outside for whenever I'll put it in the actual trash can.
Or just grow new potatoes.
And I realize after washing these potatoes, I'm eating my dinner and I'm eating my food. I'm like, oh, I can still smell potato stink on my hands. I should have washed my hands with soap. It wasn't enough. To actually wash your hands, wash them with soap. With the stink of potato juice all over your hands. Oh my gosh. I didn't know that was so funkified. It might as well be just like human filth from your ass.
I just like that.
It's just as bad.
I know you're excited, but can I? I just want to start at the beginning of the story. So, first of all, totally understand you need a special box to hold your bread and potatoes to keep away from the rats and roaches, as we all do. But the idea, Jerry, that your potatoes juicified. Okay. First of all, I didn't know potatoes did juice, number one. That's number one. Didn't know they did that. Secondly,
alcohol.
That you looked at this sack of just rotting potato and you went, there's probably a couple good ones in there. Let me see. Instead of just paying like the $7 to get new potatoes, you're like, I think there's a couple of russets I can gully out of this fucking nightmare bag real quick.
You know, they were only like a week old and I got one potato out of the fucking bag and you spend $7 for a bag. Yeah, I get one of these potatoes are still left, you know, and you only have to chop like half of one that's still bad, that you have to squeeze like a rotten banana that's completely black and squishy. It's like, it's still half of it's pretty good. So
Jeremy, but no, that's not even, see, you're bothered by something. I agree with you, Eric, but it's not quite what I'm bothered by. Jeremy, you washed your hands underwater, but at no point you were like, I should add soap to this recipe.
not needed. Not needed. Not in that kitchen. Jesus Christ.
I can't believe after I wiped my ass, I should have washed my hands too.
Yeah, I got halfway through this potato, and although every bite induced violent vomiting where my body wouldn't accept it, I finished it after about fourth chunk.
You know, the worst thing about wiping with only one slice, you still get that residual through your ass water on your hands. Like, one slice good enough for a toilet paper, so.
Oh, my God, Jeremy.
You gotta conserve. We gotta clean just like Sheryl Crow would. So
that's exactly what I was thinking.
This is not my favorite mistake that you've made.
Jeremy, I'm just gonna throw this out here. I think, listen, the experiment with locking up your food, it was just an experiment. I think the rats are actually more hygienic than what you're doing now. So I think just let it go back out.
Look, if it makes you happy, it can't be that bad. Actually, it's really, really bad.
Jeremy, have we ever talked about or considered maybe you're like Cinderella and the rats are trying to help you?
Maybe if I just don't use soap or water for like weeks, maybe I can get the psoriasis all over my hands and face. Yeah.
I feel like maybe the rats are showing up to be like, we have to help this.
He's just like, he's
the cleaner.
Boys, he's disgusting. Come on in.
I hate it when the roaches and the rats gang up like, you got to get out of here, dude. You're filthy and disgusting. Come on, like, the roaches.
You're making our roach palace a fucking filth hole. We can't keep, they're like in the back half of the media, like, we can't keep up with the level of filth. It's ridiculous.
Instead of a pumpkin turning into a carriage, they're like, your potato boat awaits. A carved out potato.
Damn it.
Float in that pool of yours in the back.
I'm working on a new children's book called James and the Hollowed Out Filthy Rotten Potato.
James. So. Jeremy and the Rotten Potato.
And then he has a balloon that he goes into space. So God. I'm still working on it.
All right. So, guys, one lucky listener, if you'd like a bag of Jeremy's potatoes, if you enter for Fansgiving, you too can have his special. He doesn't so much mashes them as he dry ages them. You can get a nice wet bag of taters for you.
I'm working on a children's book about one of the rats that lives in Jeremy's house called Sewage Little.
Place where rats come to die. By the way, Eric, did you see the picture I sent you this week?
I'm sorry, you'd have to be, you do send me a lot of things.
From work at the toilet.
Oh yeah, you did send me that. But hey, before we go into that, story about, your toilet that you destroyed, this is actually the story you're about to hear, Ashley, is actually a good one. From Jeremy, but I like to imagine, like, Jeremy, when you like later you were cleaning up those potatoes and you smelled your fingers, you're like, huh, what is this? And you like touch it to your tongue, and then all of a sudden you just hear, don't you know that my heart is whoa, a potato high. Won't you come with me? Meanwhile, Michelle just walks in and looks at you like, oh my God, he's convulsing and he's bleeding from the mouth. He's having another stroke.
Oh, God, I could go for a potato famine right about now. This is terrible.
They're like,
another rotten potato?
Jeremy goes, do you need to go to the hospital? He goes, no, and closes his eyes and just goes, please take my hand. Eating potato juice now, money.
I love, it's one of my favorite songs, White Rat.
So yeah,
one potato makes you large. One potato makes you small. And the ones that Jeremy doesn't throw out don't grow into anything at all.
Jeremy,
bring
just
back Jefferson Starship, man.
Jeremy, if you keep eating all of these rotten potatoes, they'll mess up your Idaho. So, Ashley, there's certain things that Jeremy is luckily doesn't send you, but Jeremy sent me a picture of. I mean, it's not even shocking to me because I just call it whenever Jeremy visits picture. It's just an absolute. It's a flush toilet that's still completely devastated by the effects of what Jeremy shit. It's just. Okay. It's got. It looks like somebody just, you know, decided to have a drag race in the bowl of the toilet. Just let black and brown streaks everywhere.
So the toilet looks like a fur coat of a woman on the street, and Jeremy's shit is the paint getting thrown on
it. Exactly. You got it. And so Jeremy sent me a picture of this. He's like, check out the work bathroom. Yuck, yuck. And I'm like, that is, I went, thank you. That is exactly where it belongs. I appreciate you. But no, Jerry, did you say you actually toilet brushed it? Which is this the first time you've ever actually cleaned your own shit out of the bowl when you actually finished?
No, this is the second time, but this is really, this would have been really egregious to probably get me fired. So.
Yeah, I mean, it looked, they weren't so much streaks as they were king-size Snickers that he left behind. It was bad.
It sounds like whenever they ask Jeremy to participate in workplace culture, by culture, they mean the germs he's spreading.
Jesus Christ. This is, I gotta be honest with you, this is a great foul episode of Jeremy. I like that somehow you fixed your skin and now somehow really embraced all your other bad qualities at the same, like, it's good. I like it.
I think I tied it down to where the foulness come from. Hot dog and sauerkraut.
Ooh.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see that maybe causing some issues in the gastrointestinal world for sure.
Again, I have that moment where I hear Eric trying new Cheetos and other spicy, disgusting foods, and Jeremy's eating hot dogs and sauerkraut, and yet no one wants to spend an eternity with me, and that's shocking.
I mean, listen, you keep asking, you might get it. And next thing you're going to be, you're going to be eating fancy Woodworth taters the rest of your life, okay?
All right, you know what? I will die alone. We're good.
I want Eric's weekly bit that says, what did I get from Ollie's? So.
Oh, yeah. I haven't eaten food from Ollie's in a while. But listen, hey, we're running a little bit behind schedule, and we got a lot to go over today because we are going over the 1996 classic. The Glimmer Man, I watched this for the first time, not on VHS, because I own a VHS copy of this that I watched pretty recently. Let me just say this. I've seen a lot of Steven Seagal movies. This one is probably, from beginning to end, the funniest of the Steven Seagal movies I've ever seen. Because of, this is the movie where he does just the absolute most. He's not just a cop. He's not just an ex-CIA agent. He's not just a Far East medicine man. He's not just a fabulous musician. He's not just a forensic scientist. He's also a lover of not only his current, but also his ex-wife. And a great father who you never see his children except for one scene, and that is at their parents' funeral. It's just,
but that is my favorite man trait, is men that don't spend any time with their children, and they're like, I'm really good at this.
I'm a really good dad. I haven't seen my kids in 6 years. I'm gonna have to tell them their mom's dead. But it is a hell of a cast though that's put together for this movie. I mean, it's a who's who of 90s stars. Of course, the great Steven Seagal playing Jack Cole, the one and only Keenan Ivory Wayans, the patriarch of the Wayans clan, who's playing his partner Detective Jim Campbell. You get Bob Gunton, famous, who's playing Frank Deverell, the main bad guy in this movie, who we've actually done, we've had at least one pretty recent movie. What is it? The one with the talking dummy. Don't Speak.
Oh, Pin.
Silence. Silent? Or Dead Silence. Dead Silence.
I got you.
He's the billionaire from Dead Silence.
What about the warden from Shawshank Redemption and the head of police in Demolition Man?
Oh.
Yes, he's both of those things as well. He is the warden in the Shawshank Redemption. That's correct. You also get the great and illustrious Brian Cox in this movie, who's mm-hmm. doing struggling real hard to do a Southern accent in this movie, but I do love it. And as you go down the list, you get great character actors like Stephen Trobolesky, who is Ned Ryerson from Groundhog's Day. You get the great Peter Jason, who's Millie's father, and he's from movies like They Live and a couple other John Carpenter classics.
A lot of people in movies we've covered here on the podcast.
Absolutely. So who's who of that? But I want to jump right into the movie itself. Right from the very beginning. There's Jeremy with a picture with Bob Gunton.
Oh,
there you go.
I know him from Ace Ventura 2, right?
Yes, where he touches the eyeball and like, no! Yes, correct. <Yeah. laughs> It starts off at the police station where we get to meet Campbell, where I've played this clip a couple of times, but it's worth playing it again. He's talking to another person and you hear,
"Yo, man, why don't you just try crack?"
I like that's how we're introduced to our black lead right there. We also immediately meet Steven Seagal, who's playing Jack Cole, and here's a little bit of the interaction between Jim and Jack.
Mr. Lovebeads, you're gonna have to seek higher enlightenment somewhere else.
I'm Lieutenant Cole, been assigned to the case. They asked me to come back here, look to the front. Didn't mean to be discourteous. Nice to meet you.
Yeah, I heard about you. I wasn't expecting you so soon. You worked in New York, right? The DeMarco killings?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, well, this ain't New York and this ain't the DeMarco killings. We work as a team around here.
You know, the way I work is I just kind of like to solve the case. I don't really care who gets the credit.
Beautiful. That's that.
Oh, man. He's so high and enlightened. This is Steven Seagal. He's just sitting in his office with Beezy. He's like, I don't really care about the rules. I just care about what gets done or who gets the credit. You know me. I'm a man of peace. They immediately, on the way to go check out where these bodies are, he decides to just randomly take a call for a school shooting that's happening, which I think is fun. Now, this is before Columbine and the modern day school shootings have happened. So he shows up to the school. And I'm sorry, Ashley, go ahead.
Sorry. No, I just wanted to bring it up now as we go through the rest of this movie. Has anyone ever pointed out that Steven Seagal is just special needs?
He does have a bit of, he has the touch of the tard.
Because I just feel like his whole career is just one long make-a-wish.
I'm also one of the most biggest karate experts with Asperger's.
He has a bit of Downey in him, you know what I mean? Where like there's something about his eye movements and patterns where I feel like a special needs child. He just comes up to you and he's like, I am a medicine man and also a karate chief. Yeah, and you're like, yes, you are.
I call it Robert Downey syndrome.
My favorite part is anytime Steven Seagal sits at a computer and starts typing and you know he's just going, just like clicking the button. Yeah. There's nothing happening on the screen but research. He's just going, time to get some information out of this box.
Yeah, there's just something, there's something not right there. Like, you can tell that there's something missing, whether it's a father figure, a chromosome, like there's something that's just not present.
Yeah. It, I mean, if you were to tell me, like, removed from all this, they were like, hey, and we're looking at this many years in the future, and you showed me the movie Harry and the Hendersons, and I was like, you know this giant Sasquatch right here? He would shave down and become Steven Seagal for the rest of his career.
Yes. He's like a less likable Alf. I could see that.
Yeah. So
I programmed this computer to play track and field on the Commodore 64 so I can do the two buttons as fast as I can to run track.
Yeah. So he, I like that he goes into this Catholic school and he talks to the priest and he gets a little rundown of the situation.
Devil, he's a senior. He's got a gun and a class full of kids.
Oh, that's nice. What does he want?
I don't know. His girlfriend broke up with him. He's got her up there too.
Has he been in any kind of trouble before?
He was arrested for drugs. They had him seeing some therapist.
Yeah, it must have been the wrong therapist, huh?
I like that he blames it on the therapist, like, immediately. He's like, oh, he's getting therapy. What a pussy.
No, he's insinuating that I'd be a better therapist. I'll sit down with this young man and give him the therapy he needs.
You're right. He does know everything.
Yeah, he's like, don't you also know that I have a DSM-5 in my back pocket right now?
Yes. He knows everything. He can do everything. He can do no wrong.
He's the worst type of person.
So his plan, this kid, Devereaux, who has all the students and teacher at gunpoint, and they're pleading with him to put it down. He's like, hey, Jim, can you go find me a pair of cell phones? We gotta go figure this out. Which, by the way, cell phones aren't prevalent there. He's like, I need you to find me two cell phones so I can get this. And his plan is that he talks into a cell phone and then he's holding it in the intercom, so he sounds like he's over the intercom. He's like, I want you to look out that window. I'm gonna show you that I'm not there. And as soon as he gets to walk over the window, he just comes with a gun drawn, pointed at the kid. He's just like, fucking tricked you, you dumb bitch. Like that. And he's not, now the kid is pointing it at him and all the people in the classroom. And in real life, this is where a cop just goes shoot dead, right? And instead, Steven Seagal, it's also worth mentioning that he's a different kind of cop. You know, most cops are detectives. They wear like a button-down shirt and have their badge displayed. He is wearing teal beads with his badge also as a necklace, and then just the most flamboyant black kimono-esque with gold fucking flower pattern down
the like an Asian muumuu.
Yes.
I also double for the bass player from Rush.
Okay. And so he just bursts in the door and
this is Detective Cole, LAPD.
There you go.
I'm not here to hurt you. I'm here to help you. I got to get in some kind of dialogue with you before the guys in black get here, because I don't want to listen to anybody. I don't want you to get hurt. I want you to step over to the window and look at me.
Right.
You'll see that I'm unarmed.
He literally clicks the gun when he says that.
Come on over. Step over to the window and look at me.
Just kidding. Now I got a gun, bitch. Just kicks the
fucking gun. Sorry, Johnny. Put the gun down. I don't want to shoot you and you don't want to be dead.
Yeah, why not?
Drop the gun. Come on. What do you want?
Don't talk to me like you know me, man. You want me to start shooting?
Which, by the way, a real cop just blows him away right then when he goes wild like that. He just gets, this kid gets shot. But his solution to this is that he fucking Goldberg spears the kid so hard, not through the window, but he gets him to go through the other window on the other building. They
ridiculous. Can I point out, though, that this film is fiction, number one, because
what?
Cops don't shoot white kids.
You're right. Yeah, the white kids do that themselves. So the
I also want to be a team up movie where he's like, not only will I whisper you to sleep before I kill you. I also have my cop buddy, Bob Ross, where we'll whisper.
I'm Steven Seagal, and I'm Bob Ross, and we're just gonna sit here. And we're gonna boil some pretty little we're gonna paint some pretty little beads right now. That's right, Bob. Hey, Bob, when you were in Vietnam, gunning down those Vietnamese children, did you ever think about singing some Punani? And they just
there was nothing like the smell of burning children in those huts. It was the happiest days of my life.
Steven Seagal puts the faux and phony.
So
nothing puts me to sleep at night by the sounds of screaming, burning children.
Me too.
So immediately after he Goldberg spears this kid through a window, which, by the way, there's no kid in this class that's under the age of 25. They're all very, because his girlfriend then pops up and goes like this.
I love you, Johnny.
I love you too. Oh, I love you too. I hate this job.
So Steven Seagal.
Isn't every cop job, every cop movie say I hate this job, or yeah. Is it like not Danny Glover?
Yeah, he's
getting too old for this shit.
Don't you hate when you have to go stop a school shooting by fucking Ray Lewis-ing a kid through a window of a Catholic school? God, another day on the job.
I wish we could have thrown more people out of more windows.
Yeah. Shortly after that, we meet Frank Devereaux, the father of little Johnny. Shortly after that, one of Frank's thugs, played by the character named Donald Cunningham, played by John M. Jackson, comes in to intimidate sweet Jack Cole, Steven Seagal, saying, hey, we need you to say some certain things so little Johnny can get the help that he needs. But Steven Seagal ain't fucking having it.
Just what is it that you do for this man?
I'm in charge of Mr. Derville's security.
Oh, could have fooled me. I kind of thought you were an attorney. Listen, I want you to deliver a message for me. You tell your asshole boss that nobody threatens me.
I understand. I'll convey your feelings to Mr. Devereaux.
Now get your ugly white ass out of here.
Get your white ass out of here.
Like, that part I love so much, because is Steven Seagal insinuating that he, in fact, is not white?
He is. First of all, I don't know if you've heard his music before. Clearly, he is of the streets. He's from Jamaica, Queens.
He's the UB40 of California.
Yes. After I hassle some white people on the street, I like to rock down to Electric Avenue. And then,
white, you make me feel so good.
And then I'll take it higher.
Oh, yeah. So shortly after this, they go to check the bodies. I kind of glanced over it before, but what this killer named the Family Man does is he goes out, murders a family, and then strings them up and crucifies them on a wall. So he goes to go check out the body of this very large-breasted woman, and now we're going to learn a little. By the way, the forensic scientist there who's doing the autopsy, he's got zero answers. He's like, come on, man, I'm backed up with bodies. I can't just give you all the answers 48 hours after the death. You got to give me time. But that's time that Steven Seagal doesn't have. So here we get to hear not only the cop, not only the man of Eastern medicine, but the forensic scientist, Steven Seagal.
I think she's Russian.
Wait, I thought he was the Amazing Randy.
Hair, cheekbones, jawbone structure. I think she's Russian, most likely Georgia.
You can tell all that just by looking at her?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right. She's an Aquarius and likes country music.
Was an Aquarius. You see, the spirit has left the body. What we have here.
Did he call her an aquarium?
Yeah. I think an Aquarius. He's like, she was an Aquarius.
Yeah. Well, no, I heard the first part. I think he accidentally called her an aquarium and they didn't take it out.
Yeah. I think, hold on, let's wind it back.
Can we rewind it for a second?
And likes country music. Was an aquarium. You can tell just by looking at her?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right. She's an Aquarius and likes country music.
Was an aquarium. You see, was an aquarium.
An aquarium.
Isn't that
an aquarium?
This is the dawning of aquarium.
She was an aquarium. Which this line makes so much more sense now what he says, because he says aquarium. I feel like this is Steven Seagal improvising, right?
Yeah.
So here, listen, because now she's an empty vessel, right? Like,
what we have here is a mere broken vessel.
A broken vessel.
Anything else interesting about the body that you'd like to comment on? Or?
She got nice tits.
Precisely, Grasshopper, but a little bit too nice.
And then he takes a scalpel out and then performs immediate surgery on this lady's titty and pulls out the implant. He's like, here, run the serial number. My work here is done. So he's doing surgery in the autopsy room immediately.
Eric, this revelation of his misword use is fucking me so hard, because I feel like now I'm going to hear a Steven Seagal version of your body is a wonderland, but it's your body is an aquarium.
Your body is an aquarium. When you open your legs, it smells like flounder.
Okay.
My favorite part is that whenever silicone breasts come out of somebody's body, they're perfectly clean.
Yeah, they're perfectly clean. There's no blood on it at all. It is really good. So I like that he slices out the titty implant. Mr. Devrel, not happy with Jack Cole's reaction, so he sends his Russian friends after to go take care of him. There is some funny back and forth between Keenan Ivory Wayans and Steven Seagal, where they go to the little, basically the H Mart, where they just, it's the little Asian mart there, and they're watching Casablanca, which he loves Casablanca. He cries during it every time he sees
that
it.
Movie,
He says, I'm allergic to incense. He keeps sneezing, so he gives him this nice, he's like, here, put this on your tongue, it'll cure your allergies.
Yeah, it's bitter, man.
Bitter? I don't know why it'll be bitter.
What is this?
Oh, it's just a little bit of powdered deer penis.
Yeah? What the fuck? That's real funny, man. That's real fucking funny.
Hey. My name is Steven Seagal. Welcome to Jackass. Today we're going to make Keenan Ivory Wayans eat deer penis.
Pretty sure the original title of the movie was Powdered Deer Penis was his...
Correct, yes.
His name. So
he's a practical
I did a movie
joker.
Where I... Sorry.
No, go for it.
I did a movie where I ate deer penis, and it was called Bimbo.
Bimbo. Okay.
It was worth it. I'm glad I interrupted for that.
Next we get to see, now we've seen the practical joker, we've seen the forensic scientist, we've seen the cop, the detective. We haven't seen really the man of peace and the shaman that is Steven Seagal, as he's giving sage advice in the car here.
Is it?
Yeah.
It's called a mala, Tibetan prayer beads.
What do you use them for?
I use them to calm my mind and to purify my thoughts.
Yeah, I use Jack Daniels.
See, now we're trying to go the same place. We're just using a different technique.
Except I don't wear the bottle around my neck.
That's because you'd lose your job if you did.
Oh, man. He's so funny. He's just so funny. He's got answers for everything. This does lead up to our first real big fight scene here against the Russians. They find a carjacking on the way to investigate something, and the Russians get the drop on him. And he does mention before he gets there that it's against his religion to be a man of violence, which I think is very funny.
And he became a cop.
Yeah, and he became a cop. But we hear this. We hear this as they're forced to drop their guns. Here.
Your friend likes to do things the hard way. Now, how about you?
My friend, you know, he's a little bit country. I'm a little bit rock and roll.
What does that mean?
just an expression. What do you want?
You dead.
Why?
Because the pay is so good.
Ah, well, how about if I double the pay?
You have balls, but I don't think you have enough money.
Well, I do. I got thousands of dollars in my pocket. I'm going to reach into my back pocket slowly to get my wallet.
Sledivo.
I swear this part of the movie, okay? If you've never seen The Glimmer Man, if I gave you a million guesses on how he kills these people after this scene, there's no way you come up with Steven Seagal slowly reaches into his pocket, grabs his wallet, shows a credit card that actually has a secret knife in it that stabs and slices the neck of the Russians in front of him. Because that's exactly what fucking happens right
or
here.
You can take plastic.
Why secret? This.
Just fucking cuts them up with a secret knife credit card.
He should have slit his throat and called it Murder on the American Express.
They don't take the Visa or MasterCard. They take the American Express of death. The American Express card to hell.
It's Visa accepted everywhere.
Oh, God. So, yeah, he makes really fucking short work of these Russian clowns in no time. And he kicks the last one off of like the little dock that they're at through a very conveniently placed. This whole movie has lots of conveniently placed things in it. This time there's just random spike fence that just is there for no reason around the dock that he kicks him on top of. And after he's just murdered, you know, like seven people, you hear this line.
It's not that I can't fight. I'm not supposed to. It's against my religion, you know.
Oh, great.
I'm a Buddhist.
Yeah. The Kung Fu priest.
So, it's just against my religion. But sometimes I just murder like eight people and then ask for forgiveness. It's not a big deal. I love how fucking ridiculous every scene of this is.
Also, I knew that she was Russian because I was really into Russian porn.
I also like that he... You know, before this fight starts, he says that he's that Keenan Ivory Raines is a little bit country, but he's a little bit rock and roll, which is like, why wouldn't Keenan Ivory Raines be a little bit rock and roll? And isn't murdering people a little bit more country? Aren't you dressed a little bit more country? I've seen Fire Down Below.
No, because honestly, if you think about it, even though Keenan is black, Steven Seagal is a lot more like Chuck Berry because I think he'd piss on a woman.
Yes.
I keep my references young because Donnie and Marie was only 14 years ago.
Oh, yeah. Detective Jim is just up to his eyeballs with this new Jack Cole, and he goes to complain to his commanding officer about how ridiculous this guy is.
Yeah, show me a cop who is.
Look, I'm not talking about a cop who wears pantyhose. This guy, he speaks Chinese. He dresses like a monk. And the Russians yesterday, he took those guys out like Bruce Lee, only better. I mean, I saw him use his credit card like a goddamn Ginsu knife. Where in the hell would you learn something like that?
I don't know. Maybe the army. What do you want me to do, Jim? Look at his resume? Don't come to me with this kind of shit.
I like it. So look, he says, hey, what do you know? He's like, what? You think I look at a resume before I hire a cop? What the fuck is your problem? Why are you asking so many questions?
But I love that he's like complaining that like my partner is too good. He's making me look bad. Like what?
He's like a whispery version of Mel Gibson.
Yeah, that's what we're all thinking. So the family man shortly after this kills again, crucifies another two bodies, puts, you know, bullets in their head, stages the bodies. They do find a print, though, at the Dunleavy murder. and it turns out it's Jack Coles. Oh, our own Steven Seagal might be getting framed for this. Jim tells his coworker, who's played by who's playing Detective Rodden, played by Richard Gant. Richard Gant, I always point out in a movie whenever I find him, he's a very fun bit actor. You'll find him turn up in as a cop in the movie The Big Lebowski, where he tells the dude, he's just like, wouldn't hold out or the Creedence tapes either. He's that guy. He's also in the movie Jason Goes to Hell as the autopsy guy who yes. eats Jason's heart and becomes the vessel for Jason in that movie for a bit. So shout outs to bit actor Richard Gant. I'm a big fan, and I will always point out when you're in a film. But he has him check out and see what he can find out about Jack's life in the meantime. Steven Seagal then goes to go see his wife, Michelle Johnson, who's playing Jessica Cole. Michelle Johnson, I'm trying to remember what movie she was in we've done recently. I bet you if I click on it. Oh, she was in she was in another Quality Time episode, one of our in our top 10 most downloaded episodes. Blame It on Rio, the Christmas God! Episode. So she plays the love interest of one Michael Caine in that movie. So
did I send you the Quality Time shout out from Richard Gant? I'm thinking of the guy from the John Carpenter movie who was the leader of the They Live resistance. Sorry.
Yes, you're thinking of Peter awesome. Jason. Completely yeah. different actor, you fucking idiot. No. So we get to hear this sad tale about the identity of the last murder victim. Here we go.
Your friend likes to do things the hard way.
No.
Now, how about you?
I just must have ripped that audio again.
Right? Wow.
Your friend likes to do.
Well, he says he's like, he killed my ex-wife. Now I have to tell my kids that their mom's dead. So shout outs to Steven Seagal and his one. By the way, his now current wife cries more for his ex-wife than he actually does in this scene,
nope.
which is pretty funny. I have to tell my kids they don't have a mom anymore.
She's crying because she's like, oh, I was really hoping he was going to go back to her.
Yes.
I'm just like Conan. I can't cry. Also, I don't have any tear ducts.
I actually use deer penis to dry out my ducts for tears, so it shows weakness. He does. Steven Seagal then decides to call his old CIA buddy, Mr. Smith, paid by the great and illustrious Brian Cox. But he doesn't take his call. He says, ignore him. We got bigger fish to fry. And I'll have some Brian Cox audio as we move forward. Richard Gant can't find anything on him except that he killed the last perpetrator in the DeMarco murder and finds out that his ex-wife was the one who got murdered. Jim, Keenan Ivory Wayans, then confronts him at the funeral and tells him he knows everything but doesn't know much about you. Looks like everybody you meet ends up dead and you're the last one that's seen him. And he's like, are you a little worried about that? And Steven Seagal's like, do I look worried? And we don't know because he has no acting range in the slightest. Finally, though, Steven Seagal needs answers because he thinks Mr. Smith can give them to him, his old CIA buddy. But first he has to get in through the door. But there's a little bodyguard he's got to take care of.
Why don't you and I take your little sensitive ponytail and your little sissy beads and get out of here, okay? Let's go.
Him through a window. You don't make fun of Steven Seagal's fucking mala beads ever, okay? I don't care if this is a fancy Italian restaurant. You go through a pane of glass.
My religious beads, I'm very upset about them.
Nobody calls these sissy beads unless you fix it to get fucked up, pal.
I call my butt beads bussy beads.
But I like that all he talks about, he's like, I'm a man of peace against my religion. Nobody calls my beads gay. So He finally goes and gets a sit down with Brian Cox, where we hear this.
You know, the last two murders were definitely the work of a pro, not a serial killer. And I just have the feeling that you might know who this pro is.
Well, let me guess. They've discovered your checkered past, and now they suspect you.
Not exactly. See, they're still not totally up on my past yet, but I know you are. Therefore, I'm sure you realize what I'm capable of doing to you if I have to.
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed, I do. What kind of consultant are you looking for?
This individual gives me an impression that he's a freelancer.
Uh-huh.
Hiding his targets in the scenario of a serial killer. Likes 22, likes headshots. Seems to be inflicting custom wounds on the victims after they're dead and has excellent cleaning skills.
Well, I'll certainly keep my eyes peeled and my ears open.
Right now, that's just not going to be good enough.
So, that's Steven Seagal's thing. He's like, this isn't somebody. Somebody pretended to be a serial killer to cover their tracks and kill assets because he's an ex-CIA agent. But he gets up to go leave, and, you know, the guy he just threw through a window didn't really take that very well.
If you ever pull that shit with me again, I'll kill you. And all you little Chinese mushu pork potions in the world will not save you next time.
You know, you shouldn't knock Chinese potions. I have something in my pocket right now that'll completely clear up that bruise on your forehead.
What bruise?
Oh! And then immediately starts a giant fight scene where he beats the shit out of multiple people in this restaurant. By the way, when he walked in, he takes a reservation. He's like, no, they're going to be busy for the next 2 hours, and hangs up. And then after he destroys this place, where one time he's getting attacked, he just grabs one guy's dick and pretty much rips it off. And then kicks him so hard he flies like 20 feet through a wall. He picks up the phone for another reservation. He's like, yeah, they're gonna be closed for renovations for about, I'd say, 6 months, and then hangs up on the way out. Just got, he doesn't get any cooler than that.
As a Buddhist monk, I felt it was very religious to bang people's heads on these giant brass pillars.
There is they did get a name though from an old teacher who just like, hey, I recognize these paintings. It's here, check these out. And she just produces these really shitty finger paintings. You're like, this was my student from 40 years ago, I remember. And boy, I saved these since that day. And they're the shittiest fucking drawings. And he's like, it's definitely got to be him. There's no way he improved as an artist over these years. Got to be him.
Are you talking about the teacher?
Yeah.
Obviously, she's the crazy eye patch woman from Twin Peaks, and also the crazy female sister from People Under the Stairs
and Pulp Fiction. But yes, she plays what's her name? She's what's her name's girlfriend. From the opening scene, I'll murder every last motherfucking one of you.
Yeah, pretty much the same actress.
So. Isn't that her? That's the same one.
It's close enough. It's close enough.
Are you? You're saying, but you're saying it like I'm wrong, and I think I'm right, though. I'm pretty sure I'm right.
It's pretty much the same person. Pretty much.
Let me see if I'm wrong. Now I have to check.
I'm good with it.
You're good with it?
Yeah.
Let me see.
How we also just considered that the teacher is a
hoarder. I've actually met her. She's Martha Plimpton, and she was also in the new Star Trek. So with Picard, the bad guy in Picard. So,
what? Oh, I haven't seen Picard. Is Picard fun?
They try to milk everything from Next Generation and every other Star Trek person if they can.
Yes.
It was a good one episode with killing Michelle Forbes too. So.
I prefer retard better, but
yeah, you're right. Wendy Robbie, you're right. She's probably not the lady from Pulp Fiction. Well, I'm looking at it. That's probably
it's pretty much the same.
Oh, Eric, are you embarrassed?
No, I say stupid things all the time. I'm not.
I know. I didn't want to be the one to point it out.
No.
I'm going with it.
Jeremy is correct. I'm trying to find who's the lady from Pulp Fiction. What the fuck is her name? They look very much the same.
Martha Plimpton.
That's Martha Plimpton. There you go.
I think so. Well, but also, I got a copy of Pulp Fiction. She signed it for me, and she said,
It's awesome.
As Honey Bunny.
So. No, it's Amanda Plummer. That's Honey Bunny. There you go. Yeah. Oh yeah, you know what? They're complete two different completely people.
One's from the kid from the Goonies. Another one is
who knew?
A man is what's his name? Plumber's daughter. Yes.
One is Times New Romans. The other is Comic Sans.
I got it. So Seagal catches up with the guy who is played by Stephen Trobolesky. Steven Trobolesky holds a priest hostage. I got just a little bit so you could hear that it's him.
Tanivis, did you kill them?
I was spared them. Someone else was called.
Who was given the call, Christopher?
There's too much pain here. I gotta go now.
Listen to me.
Oh, it feels like a Groundhog Day. I gotta get out of here. Anyway, he basically commits suicide because he forces Steven Seagal to shoot him, and he does so. Clearly, he's disturbed. The chief, though, sends out internal affairs and has to go take a polygraph test. And I love the part where, so there's always base questions of like, is your name Jack Cole? He goes, yes. Have you climbed Mount Everest, which is supposed to be a no question? He goes, yes. And then they look at the thing and we're like, motherfucker, he's climbed Mount Everest. Holy shit. And like that.
Have you had sex with a shark?
Yes, I've had shark babies. And he's like, he refuses to answer certain questions about his past, so he rips it off. And they go to look at it and they're like, I think this is impossible. He passed every single fucking question.
Have you crawled for 5 weeks for 500 miles in 10 days?
So he takes his badge. The lieutenant takes his badge off of him. So now he's just working freelance. He goes to check the lady with the big tits house, Sonia's house, and finds that there is a delivery that was there that links him to basically our main baddie, right?
Have you eaten 100 hot dogs at a sitting?
Yes. But he also gets attacked there, and the guy who clearly could have a gun or anything else decides to just use a really shitty stick to attack Steven Seagal with. Steven Seagal beats the fuck out of him. He goes back to report. It's actually Donald, the right-hand man of Frank Devereaux, and he says, don't worry, we'll get this idiot and fucking take care of him. I checked everywhere. There's nothing that connects you, even though he clearly has information there. Seagal meets up with Keenan Ivory Wayans once again and lays out the whole plot of the movie. Here.
He's got something more sinister going on. He has to terminate some targets. So he kills his targets and their entire families to make himself look like the family man.
While we're looking for a serial killer.
When in fact, there's two of them and one of them's a pro.
How do you know it's a pro?
Because I know the work of a pro. I found this in Sergio Gustav's house. It's a round trip ticket to Moscow, bought and paid for by Devereaux Industry.
So you think Frank Devereaux has something to do with this?
I do, sir.
Now, Sonia Rostov, she was a translator. I mean, if Devereaux did any business in Russia, it makes sense that he would hire someone like that.
What if she was a mule?
Smuggling what?
Chemical weapons of some kind. I mean, you know, now that the wall fell, there's a ton of that stuff floating around everywhere.
That would explain the cancer in her body.
And if you look at who controls that stuff on the black market, it's the Russian mafia.
As in the guys who jumped us.
Got it.
So what connects the Dunleavys to Devereaux?
I don't know yet, but I know we can find out.
You know they will take my badge if they find out I'm working with you. But my gut tells me you might be right. I always go with my gut.
Okay.
I don't know about you, but I'm gonna go see the rest of this movie.
Which is Casablanca.
You never seen Casablanca?
You're asking me if I've ever seen Casablanca?
Have you?
You gotta be kidding. Me? Never seen Casablanca?
Have you ever seen Casablanca?
No.
Man, what a great bit. He ain't got time for love, okay? He just watched his ex-wife get murdered.
I just realized that the weigh-in became the biggest of the Wayans, Damon Wayans, and because of being a Steven Seagal film, the other Keenan Wayans became the Charlie Murphy of the brothers because
I disagree. First of all, Keenan Ivory Wayans, the lead writer, director, and star of "I'm Gonna Get You, Sucker." I will not have you badmouth him. Thank you, sir. Thank you. Good day, sir. Good day.
And he was the older, but he pretty much dropped off the map because the younger of the brothers is still doing the Scream movies and
Scary Movies. Marlon Wayans and
Is there like 10 other Wayans brothers?
Yeah,
and they're like they get younger and younger, kind of like the Osmonds.
Damon Wayans Newton. There's a lot of them.
Wayans Newton.
I think it's time we talk about the unsung Woodworth brother, DeMonte.
DeMonte Woodworth. Del Monte Woodworth. He's actually
we don't talk about him.
Picante.
He's severely retarded, but he's still a great actor.
Oh, that's what's in Eric's shed. I always wondered.
So
he doesn't like wearing clothes.
Cox, neither does Eric.
Cox and
he also likes to bite, and he scratches people and bites people.
Wait, does Eric just have an alter ego? What's happening? There's not a third brother.
Yeah, for years and years, Ashley. If I just spoke like this.
This makes sense.
Look, he doesn't really bathe, but we hose him. We hose him out.
And he lives off of dead potatoes.
So
he can poop on the floor whenever he wants.
It is. I've never stopped shitting on the floor ever. I will continue doing it.
We take his duct tape off every once in a while so he can still move. So
okay. We finally, though, find out that Brian Cox and Devereaux are indeed in cahoots, where we get to hear this.
Recruited him for a special projects unit. Program, we called it. He handled a lot of odd jobs for us.
Such as?
Now, Mr. Devereaux, don't ask about things you don't really want to know. Suffice to say, to the people he hunted for us, he was known as the Glimmer Man. There'd be nothing but jungle. Then a glimmer. Then you'd be dead.
There we go. Titular line, the Glimmer Man. Sweet Brian Cox gives him an ultimatum. He says, listen, I got four loose ends. You're one of them. Three of them got to go. Your son and both of these cops. And I like that he's like, don't worry. I'll take care of your son. You don't have to do that. You have the cop. You have the ex-CIA agent that's impossible to fucking kill and the other law enforcement agent. You take care of those two. Me, Mr. CIA man, I'll handle your fucking mentally disturbed son who's now in a mental ward. I'll take the hard, heavy lifting on this one.
It is the Ace Ventura of the first movie. Yeah.
So, Jim almost gets blown up in a karate fight. Keenan Ivory Wayans, he has a karate fight inside of his apartment that the stove gets jacked up and it explodes. He's able to jump out a window, narrowly escape. Steven Seagal, on the other hand, gets attacked by people in internal affairs it's actually the Russian mob posing as him. They get into a car. He fucking stabs the shit out of them with the handcuff, I believe, and then the car flips. He kicks out the back window and rolls to safety as it runs into an oil tanker and explodes. Just in the most ridiculous turn of events that only Steven Seagal could do.
The thing is, I hate when tanker trucks just block any roadway and so that you can just drive into them. I hate that.
Also, if you watch this chase scene in the car where he's fighting him in the car, I need you to notice when you're watching how many just incandescent bulbs they run over during it. There's just random boxes of just fucking fluorescent tube bulbs everywhere they drive. And they're just like, oh, we'll just put these right here in the roadway so you can run over these. And then inside the warehouse, they're like, well, it's the incandescent bulb factory. Of course they're everywhere. They're just fucking running over them. Like it's a ECW match from the late 90s. It's wild.
I guess because of the movie Goodfellas, that a gun is a dangerous thing, but it's also dangerous to be punched by a gun like 1,000 times from the sides. Yeah. So
it does hurt. It does hurt. They are able to rescue Johnny shortly after that before he gets killed. Steven Seagal is able to stop them. They connect the teacher, Brian Cox. All the pieces are now into place. But first, Steven Seagal has to go pick up Brian Cox. He finds out that he's been smuggling, but they need to interrogate him. He goes with the classic CIA-proven interrogation method, which is shoot him in the foot first, and then when he doesn't want to talk, shoot him in the hand after that. And Brian Cox finally relents and says, okay, please, can you just call me an ambulance and I'll tell you? And this, listen how calm somebody who's been shot twice speaks here.
God, I miss you, Jack. So many young men today just won't go that extra mile.
I miss you too, Smith. Now, what is it?
Devil is smuggling chemical weapons in from Russia. I made the contacts for him. The deal's being brokered by the Russian mafia. Wouldn't you gentlemen mind calling me an ambulance?
He tells them, no, I'm not going to call an ambulance, and says this.
Gentlemen, leave us not forget. A little matter of the ambulance.
Listen, I only shot you in 1 foot. Hobble to a hospital.
Fucking pussy. So he makes Brian Cox just hobble his way back home. So now it's time for the big old climax here. Seagal gives a basically sets it up. This great plan. This is actually a really good plan. He records his conversation with Cox and he plays it to Devereaux, and he's just like, hey, all I want is your shooter, though. You bring me a shooter, and I'll let you go. And then he records that conversation of Devereaux agreeing and then plays it to the shooter guy and calls him. And now he's basically pitted them against each other. It's a perfect thing. He's like, oh, cool. We'll just get the bad guys to kill each other. He's talking about things like the art of war. It all climaxes in this small apartment where they're supposed to be hiding and all the bad guys are in there. They draw guns on each other. The shooter fucking shoots Devereaux, shoots him, and all of them are about to kill each other and they're standing outside the room. He's like, Keenan Ivory Rains goes, hey man, what happened to this whole plan of like, we just let them basically kill each other? He's just like, oh, you think y'all's going to listen to the plan? He kicks in the door and starts a gunfight with all of them for no reason. There was no point for him to set any of this up. He just wanted to go and kill them all himself. And so he then walks in. It is the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen in this movie. All right. We've talked about him jumping out of oil tankers, eating deer penis, all of this. At one point, he takes like a stand-up washer dryer and tips it over. And then without looking, he's just holding the gun over top of it. He shoots like 6 people blind. Blindly like this, it kills all of them except for the main guy, the main shooter bad guy, who uses a body shield, which by the way gets shot like 8 times as he's walking him out the door. It's just the most ridiculous set of circumstances I've ever seen in a firefight. But that's just how good we're to believe the great Lieutenant Jack Cole, ex-CIA Steven Seagal, is. That was a mouthful there.
I just like to get the audience reaction with Ridley Scott. Like, wow, this is amazingly bad. Oh,
yeah,
gosh.
Yeah.
Why do I make these like action thrillers, making really shitty action thrillers?
I love this movie so much. Keenan Ivory Wayans almost shoots two kids with water guns, which I thought was a nice add to this thing. Or like, he almost does. He's like, but I'm a good cop. I wouldn't just shoot a kid with a water gun. What do I look like? The black cop from Die Hard? Okay. So he then, though, gets the drop on him, and he falls out another window, because that's all it does is jump out of windows in the third act. And he's hanging on. Of course, Steven Seagal, who's on the roof where he's not needed at all, decides to rappel down using wires and safely bring him to safety, then go all the way to the bottom floor, rappel the rest of the way down to meet the killer in the lobby, where he locks the door, and instead of just waiting for him, he's like holding a newspaper up at the desk and he goes, "Surprise, motherfucker," like that. So he's got enough time to rappel, lock up, and then you're like, hey, what would be a cool way to scare him? Oh yeah, I'll wait behind the desk here and really fuck with him. So they have a karate fight, and he clearly is not doing great against the great Steven Seagal. Who could? And we hear this line here.
You know, when you wake up in the morning and look in the mirror, I think you're probably happy, pleased at what you see. And that disturbs me. So I'm going to take it on as my responsibility to make sure that you never get to look in the mirror again.
I woke up happy. I'm going to bed happy. Because you're going to be dead.
And more karate fighting, where eventually he actually punches Steven Seagal in the face once and makes him bleed. And then he goes, oh yeah? And he throws him out of a fucking window and impales him through the mouth on the second spike fence that he's killed somebody on in this movie. And looks down and delivers this line.
You don't look like you're going to be waking up happy now.
The day is saved. He's murdered every single person, and Jim is getting carted off to the hospital. As he's being put in the back, they have this wonderful exchange right here.
All my worldly possessions burned to a crisp. Basically, I'm homeless. Not one good thing has happened since I met you.
Yeah, but you got to try powdered deer penis. That should count for something.
Don't call me, Jack. Don't leave me a message. Don't fax me. If I see a bird on my window with a message on his foot, I'm throwing him back out. Don't send flowers. Forget you know me, Jack.
And then with some cool country blues playing us out, because nothing says California Cop like this ending song. This brings us to an end of The Glimmer Man, 1996. Ashley, your final thoughts on The Glimmer Man?
I watched the wrong movie. So I watched a movie where an Asian guy ate a black guy's ass, and it was called The Rimmer Man.
The Rimmer. Ah, The Rimmer Man. So it's, I said it right. I said it right. Jeremy, your final thoughts on The Glimmer Man.
Out of all the Steven Seagal films, I just wish that he could have had another movie where he just always beat up minorities. So,
well, you have to really go. You're going to have to wait till Exit Wounds with DMX in 2001 for that.
But he says a minority buddy.
So, overall, though, The Glimmer Man is just, I really feel like the pinnacle of bad Steven Seagal movies. If you really want to watch it, check it out. It's so cringy and great. His wardrobe is a 10 out of 10. Check it out. YouTube, wherever you want to download movies. Ashley, where can people find you coming up at? What's on the docket?
You can always find me online at AshleyPontiusLaughs.com, or you can find me on Instagram as well. I will be headlining in Delaware on the 28th, and then on the 29th, you can catch me in York with Michael Stork and Michael Pallotta.
Hell yeah. Check all that stuff out. Very fun times. You can catch all things Eric Comedy at ericcomedy.com. The next really ginormous show that I'd like to put on your radar is going to be October 27th, where Tommy and I are throwing together some money to actually get a professionally multi-camera angled shot of Bussy. So prepare yourselves for that. Be there at the end of October. Jeremy, take us out of here.
I'll kill you. I'm Josh Siegel.